Mob Mentality Show. I'm Chris Lucian, and this is Austin Chadwick. And here we are joined by Damian Clinard. And he's going to talk to us a little bit about UI, UX mobbing, and kind of start off with a story. But first, Damian, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your experience with mobbing before we get too deep into the initial topic?
Sure. Thanks for the invitation to the show, I guess. I've been a super keen listener to many of the episodes, and I think what you're doing is great work. So thanks for that. And now I'm here myself, which is a bit weird, I guess. where do I start? So about 5.5 years, I joined a company that had about 1,000 employees back when I joined. And so in the last 5 years, it actually grew from 1,000 to 5,000 and something employees. Wow. So a lot of growth and a lot of new people. I've personally also learned a lot in this time, but as you can imagine, in an environment that grows so quickly, a lot of things change pretty much all the time. Like, change is the only constant, you might say.
Yeah.
And so I found I was working like in another country on site with the team for quite a while. And then I think after about 2 years, I moved back to Germany, Berlin, where I'm based from now. And I started doing working remotely for the same company, which made for an interesting setup. And then over time, I guess our team grew and grew. And at some point we had like 5 developers, which we are still at the moment, all of us working kind of from Europe together. So we have our own kind of team. Now, what's very interesting is we only have developers in this time zone, and all the other capabilities like product management and like business analysts and designers, they all sit in a different time zone. Very far away, currently 10 hours away, which makes for a very interesting setup. And so given, I guess, the amount of change that we had in the company and then also like this new team setup, we found ourselves in a very interesting position. And I guess we'll talk a little bit more about myself, about that story. Enough about myself, though, I guess.
All right. Well, that is a good segue into our topic. So I'm going to move it over on the board. And then we can get started. I guess, you know, kick it off. So it sounds like you have a really interesting story, and we'll just ask questions as we go along.
Okay, perfect. Just interrupt me. I tend to sometimes go into monologues.
That's okay. Yeah, we're totally fine with that too.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, just, I guess, taking, going back to where we stopped a second ago. I think the team had, at some point, we had this team set up and we had this project that we really needed to get out. And there was like a pretty strict deadline. And I think that the project started out, it was like change. It was a bunch of changes. So how do I start? So the service that we're working on was basically a bunch of things glued together over time, because as you can imagine, with a company that changes so quickly, no one really owns anything. Things are being added and then people move on, right? And so you have this duct tape thing that was put together for good reasons, of course, right? It's not that anyone did this by intention, but over time it grew like this.
I think we call that microservices these days.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. We have 3,000 of them with 5,000 employees, which is also interesting, another topic. The interesting thing is then, we had this code base that was really hard to work in, and that is how we all started. And in the beginning, we had all of this developers. Most of us hadn't seen the code base before, and we tried to change things, and it was actually really hard. So in the beginning, our first couple of changes would break production, as you can imagine, although we did our best. I'm not really proud of it, but it happened. So what we did is basically, we started with knowledge sharing sessions, basically, where we would just get together once every week for 1 hour. And then in this 1 hour, I guess, we would just bring up pieces of code that we didn't really understand, and we were trying to make sense of it together as a group, as a mob, basically. So by that time, we hadn't really heard the term mob programming, although very soon, when we shared our experiences with the rest of the company, other people said, "You're doing mob programming, you know."
That's interesting.
We're like, right? Oh. Yeah, so we started by looking at code mostly and mostly trying to make sense of it. And the team actually liked it quite a lot, because most of us had been solo programmers for the majority of our careers. So it was quite new. We did some pair programming, some individuals, but not everyone. So we really enjoyed it. And especially working like in a remote or distributed team, it gave us this sense of belonging as well, which we didn't have before, right? Instead of everyone just checking in to update their tickets or something, or have a stand-up and then disappear again, we spent more and more time using this mob programming sessions. And in the beginning, we were just understanding code. Then we were writing code to test together. And at some point, we would actually also change the code. Mm-hmm. So that worked quite well. And I think the pressure increased a little bit when we got an urgent project as a team, as I guess every software development story goes like that. Here you go, kind of, right? And
yeah,
so,
exactly.
I don't know, we had a certain amount of weeks. And so as we were progressing through the project, we had to clean up a lot of things. I'm a big believer of this idea. I think Kent Beck termed it, for every change you need to do, first make the change easy, and then do the easy change.
I think I quoted that to a number of people today already.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Awesome. I just mentioned it today to one of my mentees as well.
It's
a great maxim, isn't it?
Yep.
Basically, we started, and in the beginning, we had to clear a lot of technical things, basically, like working with database and where the data was coming from, kind of making sure that the permission checks would work, right? The things you don't want to see fail. And so very traditionally in the company, I guess what's interesting, the way they work, or my colleagues work in this company, because everything changes so quickly, is via design specifications. So interestingly enough, like, although we have like a company of 5,000, I think 3,000 of that is developers, and there's very little designers. So the ratio is completely off. I think we have one designer per 20 developers.
Wow.
So yeah, as you can imagine, the designers are easily overloaded, right, with just requests and doing stuff. So what they prefer to do, or the process that they kind of started doing most of the times, is they make like this kind of pages or specifications, right, of like, this is how it should look like, and they make it look really pixel perfect. And then next to it, they say like, this is what it should look like. And then the design is kind of handed to the developers, right? And kind of, you should do this by then. So our team, I guess we were a bit naive because we were pushing most of the design work to the very end and didn't start doing that. So I guess like halfway through the project, when we had about like maybe 4 more weeks or something, we started with the design, and we realized that just from looking at the designs, we didn't really understand, we couldn't answer everything, right? You probably have experienced that yourself, right?
Yeah.
When you get like a plan or a spec page, and it looks perfect at the first glance, but the moment you implement it, it's like, I don't understand, right?
Yeah, the logic doesn't quite work out or something like that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
exactly. Or you're like, what is if things go wrong here?
Yeah.
This kind of thing, exactly. And so that was becoming an issue because of the time zone difference. As I told you, it was like 10 hours. Because of the time zone difference, it was really like every time we made a change, had a question, we would have a 24-hour round trip to have an answer.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
I've seen that before.
Did you?
Yeah. It's very hard to deal with because you're basically waiting, 24 hours every time you need something. And that's kind of one of, if you have daily communication with your designer, that's the worst situation you can be in for daily communication. The only other worst situation is if you have to wait multiple days, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's true. Oh, that's the, I imagine a week or something, I guess, right? To get clearance. So the design of our team was actually really supportive, which is good. Although, as I told you, all the designers are super overloaded, right? Like they have like this, so many developers and so many projects at once. And so they're constantly like jumping from one thing to the other, which is a more fundamental system-wide question that should be solved at the root. But anyway, so
absolutely.
We did some medicine or like hot fixes to that.
So what happened next?
So I think we started really soon. We noticed really soon because the deadline, the project end was approaching, that with this forth and back, we actually had not so much it couldn't be that successful, or that actually it would take way too long time to get it completed. And so I guess when you find yourself in the situation, you have three options, right? The first one is like, guess kind of what the right answer is and accept that you might need to do rework every time. The second one is kind of block and try to communicate as much as you possibly can and like wait and avoid any rework. And I guess the third one is to maximize for communication.
Yeah.
So with the designer in that particular case, they had like three different time zones to cater all around the world. So because of stand-up meetings with another team in yet another time zone, right, we're all across the globe, the designer couldn't really join us for stand-ups. So all we were reduced to is text as a communication medium for asking those questions. And so I think what made it even more interesting here is with text, right? It's like, I like to describe it this way, right? Like text is this low bandwidth kind of medium where a lot of information gets lost. And sometimes you write like one sentence and people understand it super well. And sometimes you write a paragraph like this and people don't understand what you mean at all, right?
Yeah.
So, and then like sometimes someone asks a question or you try to cater for it, you try to over communicate by like going through all the different corner cases that this could be understood. And then you forget one and then the other person might misunderstand exactly that point.
Yeah.
As you can see, we actually had like a lot of like communication issues because of the time zones and because of the ratio. So after a week or two, the deadline was approaching and it got quite clear that we would never be able to get the entire design implemented, right? Which is interesting. So I don't remember exactly anymore how this worked, but at some point someone had the idea basically to say, why don't we invite the designer to one of our mob programming sessions just to see how it's going, right? And build some empathy basically and just like try to answer these questions instead of maybe making it every once in a while into a planning meeting and just looking at the design. Why not just like come and try to write this code together, I guess. And that is the entire pre-story.
So how did they accept that? And because you were separated by distance, how did you make it happen?
I think it started just with someone saying like, how about doing like an experiment? Like we want to give this a try. Look, like it's definitely, the deadline is getting closer. We are all interested in like a good outcome, right? We want this delivered. And I think it, thanks to like the designer's willingness to, you know, like stay awake for longer than is healthy for the end of the project, I guess, right? Thanks to that special commitment that we were very grateful for, we actually managed to get like the designer and stay with us, I guess.
Oh, great. And how, so you said it was just like during your mob programming sessions. How long were these sessions? And was it daily? Was it that this designer was able to join, or was it once a week? What was the frequency?
Yeah, so I think it happened like we did three sessions in total. So because we had like maybe 2 weeks left, we had two in the first week and one in the last one. So it's really not that many, but in that already, I think we had some really interesting learnings. Each of the sessions was 1 hour. So as a mob, when we just do developers, we tend to do 1 hour with one or two breaks in between to ease it up. And then usually maybe in the afternoon we regroup or something, but we haven't done more than like an hour usually in one go.
Okay.
So I guess the designer just jumped on the call that we were using. And actually also jumped in the code editor that we were using, which had like some, you know, collaboration features. And the very first session was super interesting, right? Because in this very first session, first of all, you had like a group of developers not understanding a lot about design. I'm talking about myself mostly. I have no idea about design. not so sure about the rest of my team, but for me, I know very little. And so it started with, you know, like, us saying, okay, so now we should be building this. And the designer would explain, this is like what you're building. And we're like, but why, by the way? And then that was the first super cool thing that came out of it, because suddenly the designer not only said what needed to be done, but why something needed to be done.
Nice.
And that was a super powerful learning, right? Because behind user interface and user experience design, there's a lot of research and thinking that goes into it, into the idea of like why things behave in a certain way. And so in a specification page, often, or at least in the ones we had, this is not committed that much or not written down. And so you only get the what, but never the why. And so that was the first powerful thing, right? Like developers just learning, I guess, like how UX designers think.
Yeah. So what were the differences that you saw between the way that you were communicating before and the mobbing sessions?
Do you mean like with the designer or like just the
outcomes in general? So you said that you ran into a lot of problems. Were these problems gone afterwards? How did it... what were the side effects of you mobbing with them?
Yeah, so I think the very first thing that got clear in the first session, so we did a short retrospective after that, just like, 5 minutes, how did it go? And we realized one very interesting problem right ahead in the session, which was the death loop that we had. When we made even a simple change in the CSS, was like, I don't want to exaggerate, but let's say 5 minutes, right?
Yeah.
A very fast long time.
2 hours. No.
Exactly. So you make like 5 lines of CSS change and then the time is over almost. Yeah. That's how it felt. So the first side effect, I guess, of that was of the learning was like, hey, this was cool. We now understand the why. So good learning for the group. And the first side effect was really, okay, if we want to do this again, because it was actually quite nice, we need to have a better dev loop.
Nice.
So we spent like one more day or 2 days, I don't remember anymore exactly, but a bit of time to get the dev loop better. And you know, because we didn't do so much design changes before, there were a lot of easy gains to be made, right? Instead of compiling like everything all the time, you could go and like just compile the thing you were working on. You could have like a live rebuild server going on. These kind of optimizations that with a little bit of thought make it a lot nicer. And I guess that is like the technical things that changed.
Yeah.
What's also interesting is just like the feeling of being a group again, very similar to what we experienced as a group of developers. When we had the designer join, we actually had empathy. That was the first time we learned how many different projects the designers are working on in general, right?
Oh,
and like how crazy the time zones are.
Yeah.
Like it's very different when you get a piece of text with a spec and you don't know in what mood something was written, and having someone who is maybe a bit tired and says, sorry, like I'm not up to my game. I'm working for so and so long, right? It makes for a very different dynamic, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So that was a positive side effect as well, yeah. I guess.
So you got to understand why, you got to understand some empathy, like know them as a person, not just as a far off author of a document, right?
Yeah.
How was the feedback loops? Because before it was like you change something, wait 24 hours. What, you know, maybe going into the second, third session, like when you had your tech with a faster loop as far as refreshing the UI, how was the feedback in the mobbing session?
Yeah, great question. So we started, as you said, with like 24 hours, basically.
Yeah.
We then went to something 5-minute-ish, which still wasn't great. And then after the improvements in the second session already, we were down to like 30 seconds or something, which is still not like ideal. Like you can probably improve it, but all the low-hanging fruits have been picked by them, right?
Yeah.
But 30 seconds is a hell of a lot better than 24 hours.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so the tech made it so that basically the designer could see it and then tell you, no, that's not good, or that's fine, or tweak this or that. Okay. So
yep.
So it was down to feedback loop of once per day to in an hour, you know, at least
multiple
10, 20 or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that was already great, although it was just like in this 1 hour. Another thing we learned is that the ratio was not that great. Like we had, if you have like 5 developers and 1 designer, it's easy. It didn't make for the best balance, I think, just because most of us, I guess, were cherishing the moment of being able to ask questions, right? So we needed to make sure that like we wouldn't, like every one of us was curious. And so we wanted to make sure that we didn't, you know, like have too many people answer questions. So we rotated the people that were working kind of in those sessions, right? So we went to a ratio in the second session of 3 developers and 1 designer, basically.
Excellent.
Also there is only so much that can be learned about like CSS and style changes, I guess. So,
yeah, right on. And I guess I'll just kind of yes and your story. For the time I've been mobbing, there was a time period where we mobbed with a UI UX engineer, and I thought it was phenomenal. So they would come by the mob, they would come join the mob, either a pair or a few of the developers would go with the UX engineer, or the whole mob, and we would get those, that exactly what you're talking about, we saw, where before we'd be like, oh, we did an update, check it out, wait a while, and then come back with the changes. It was like, we change it, and then on the fly, we'd all see it, and then give feedback on, okay, we should change that, we should change that. And it went both ways. So we would make a change, and then the designer would be like, that's great or not good. But also, sometimes the design is not implementable in the framework or whatever. And so you could have that conversation like, well, if we do it how you're thinking, it's going to be way more complicated. What about this alternative? And you could just have that conversation right then and there. Yep. And you could know, it'd be like, the person could be like, that is a good compromise. We can go with this other design because it's way more efficient. And so for the period of time I did that, I found it phenomenal and a great, much better experience than the distance of getting a design and then trying to code to it and then waiting for feedback, you know, kind of thing. And so, yeah, so anything else to share on that story or?
I mean, like what I really liked is what you just mentioned, the feedback loop, right? So when you use user stories or something, very often you have this idea of estimating the relative size, right, of options. And when you have different skills across disciplined team, right, then you can actually explore those options and you can say, well, we can do this and it might be harder. What if we tried this, which is a super hack that we could make? And then if you have like the designer there, right, they can say, yeah, it's actually really, this can go so much better. Like, I don't really mind, right? Like, this approach, I don't mind. It's equally good to the other one. I haven't thought of that, right? And you get like this synergy. It's, I think, like a business speak word, but like, you get this moments of like reaching better outcomes together, which is super cool. And I think the last thing I wanted to share, which I forgot before, which was the most amazing thing in this entire thing, is basically this, right? The designer noticed that this was the first time they could actually make changes to things that had always bugged them, you know, like, for example, like things being a bit off or like this button not saying having the correct text and these kind of things that really harm the user experience, the flow of going through like an entire journey, right?
Yeah.
And so they were like, this annoyed me all the time, but I didn't have the energy to make like this spec page for it, right? Can we just fix it? And then just fixed it, right? And I was like, yes. A 1-year pain point just gone in like a few minutes.
Yes, absolutely. have you kind of, so you said you have a lot of developers and designers at your company. Have you shared this? Like, has this grown at all? Or is this something that you're just sharing for the first time? Like, how much have you talked about this experience to people?
Yeah, I've been actually open, quite literally, talking a lot about it, and I'm encouraging many people to mob programming and get the different skills or like roles, I guess, involved as well. I think the problematic situation was a bit for us, like after the project had been delivered with that one particular designer, we had to stop because of the time zones, and it wasn't like a thing you could do, unfortunately. And we actually got, unfortunately, some pushback from management who didn't like. And we have a very strong because of all the changes going on. It's almost like B+ trees, you know, where you add like leaves to the tree, and at some point, like it reshuffles the entire tree.
Yes.
So we had some managers that that weren't part of the experience, and they, I think, like if you tell someone, right, like you get like 7 people in the same room and they work on the same thing, it's like, why should we be paying for this, right? Like,
that's always the hard question, for sure.
Exactly. And so I am not yet good enough, I guess, to convince like 2 or 3 managers above me to actually give this more of a try and iterate on it. I think I have to work on my communication skills and, I guess, my salesman pitches.
Well, I think that could be easily another episode that we do in the future.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so unfortunately, we got some pushback on that, but other teams are embracing it, and I get, because of things like your show, for example, right, or the book, or like all the stories that are out there already, I'm like constantly annoying people, I guess, by sending them this and like, hey, someone else is doing this too.
Perfect. That's what we want.
Yeah, we have one of those business wins where we invite, like, we call it like almost invite the expert. So say a team needs to work really with analytics or like user tracking, right, for a short period of time. So we just get the expert into the mob for a while, and then the expert goes away. And very often the expert that has been through the experience goes, next time they interact with another team, they go, can I just sit down with you and just like we try this?
Fantastic.
Right on. Well, yeah. Cool. Yeah. I think we're hitting our time box. I'm really glad you came on the show. It's really great to hear stories of people's experiences with mobbing. And this one in particular was cool because there is kind of a whole lean UX movement out there. And I feel like it has a lot of synergy again. We'll use the word synergy with mob programming. And so we just really appreciate you sharing your story. Before we close, is there anything else you'd like to plug or share?
Well, I want to say sorry. I've been talking, giving you a long monologue, so sorry.
No, that was perfect.
Yeah, this was great.
The audience has heard enough of us, I'm sure.
Yeah. there's plenty of us talking.
Well, I guess the last thing I want to say is, like, for everyone listening, look at this cool board that what is the name? Like, Software Professional Resources, right?
Oh, yeah. Just...
Yes, yes. Oh, our Trello board of resources.
Yeah. I've been slowly going through that board, and like I've been like there's so many gems in there. Like I just ordered before the show Dynamic Reteaming, which I haven't read yet, but which is on your board.
Heidi,
so everyone check that out. I think there's lots to be learned.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for being on the show, and I'll tell all of our viewers, if you think this episode would be really useful to somebody out there, the best thing you can do is share it with them. And then, as always, like and subscribe, and we're really glad that you could spend some time sitting with us and chatting and talking about mobbing with UI and UX. So we'll see you next time. Bye.
See ya.
Bye.